0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie and 0818 715 815. But I want to encourage people to stop ringing us about one particular issue that has exercised a lot of our callers this morning. They had heard wherever that Peter McFerry, Father Peter McFerry, the Jesuit founder of the homeless charity and McFerry Trust, had been unwell. And we got on to the Peter McFerry Trust. And just to stop people ringing us, basically, this is what they've asked us to say. In light of speculation and on the foot of the inquiry, we can confirm that Peter McFerry was involved in a minor incident at his home in recent days. In the early hours of Wednesday morning, Father Peter opened his door to an individual knocking for help. It soon became clear that the person was affected by drugs and alcohol. In the brief interaction that followed, Father Peter McFerry sustained minor injuries leading to bruising on his face, particularly around one eye. After this brief engagement, the person left. The Gardaí were not called. On learning of the incident, the Peter McFerry Trust CEO, Pat Doyle, who you've heard many times in this programme, presented immediately to Peter an offer of support and administered first aid. Pat said, "We are issuing the statement to offer clarity on Peter's well-being. He's recovering from his injuries, which were thankfully only superficial and did not result in hospitalisation or attendance at A&E. Peter McFerry Trust continues to offer every support to Peter. Peter's already back carrying out and focusing on his work to help vulnerable people impacted by homelessness and addiction. The person has since realised the impact of their actions and has presented and apologised to Peter. There will be no Garda involvement, and Peter considers the matter involved. On behalf of Peter, we would appeal for the media and public to respect his privacy at this time. Neither Peter nor the charity will be commenting further on this matter." Peter stressed that this is only the second time in 40 years that he's been assaulted, and he does not want this incident to distract from the issue of homelessness and people impacted. I think that's that is enough detail for everyone at this stage. So we're grateful of people. Obviously, if he's listening or Pat is listening, I'm sure Pat is listening. I don't know whether Peter is in work or not. Our best wishes go out to him on your behalf. So he is recovering from that assault. 0818 715 815. Back to the issue that began on Thursday, the issue of language and the language that's changing on a daily basis, but it's the removal of the word mother and a woman from the new Maternity Act and the insertion of the word parent or carer. Now, Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Okay, your contribution, please, Brian.
Joe, as I'm with a young teenage daughter who's lesbian, and looking through this through her eyes, in not too many years' time, she'll be an adult. And I was very disappointed to learn that the word woman was going to be removed from this bill. It seems that there is no word now to describe an adult human female. When she'll be an adult in a few short years, and there's no word to describe her. Instead, she will be a person as opposed to a woman. It seems like the only person who can be called a woman now would be a male who wants to identify as a woman in legislation, whereas an actual adult female is a person. So there was that issue, and then an associated issue with it is that as a lesbian, she was asked a couple of years ago, while she's still navigating through puberty and her sexuality, by a slightly older teenage male who said he identified as a female. Asked her out, and she said no, she wasn't interested, and she was called transphobic and bigoted for this, which is like.
So your daughter, who is a lesbian, and she was asked out by a transgender man, a man who was identifying.
Well, he's a boy, teenage boy.
Identifying as a female.
Yes. And he said he was a lesbian. And so, and he expected her to be open to dating him, or as he says, her, because he identified as a lesbian.
Okay.
But she said, she didn't consider him a lesbian. She said, no, you might identify as trans, but I don't consider you as a lesbian. And she wasn't into him full stop, regardless of.
Yeah,
but she said no. And that was, but she was by saying that she wasn't interested and she was called transphobic and bigoted. That was what he said to her.
Now, the argument for changing the language is always changing, but to make it more inclusive.
Well, I don't see how it is inclusive when you're excluding 51% of the population to accommodate a tiny minority. Like, they're removing the word woman to accommodate someone who doesn't want to be a woman, who say they want to be a man, but they want to get pregnant and have a baby. That doesn't sound like someone who doesn't want to be a woman. So that, how many people are going to say they don't want to be a woman, they want to be a man, but they want to have a baby? And because of that, the whole 51% of the population is being erased from legislation. Like, how is there no word to describe a woman? What's the word now to describe someone who's an adult human female?
A person with a cervix. Isn't that the
Menstruator or a gestator or dehumanising language, reducing women to body functions. It's not happening with men. When I see the HSC looking for or giving advice about prostate cancer, it's men. But when it's women, it's people with a cervix.
Going back to the argument, and I know people will check me if I get a single word wrong or in the wrong place in a full sentence. In 2015, the Irish legislature brought in gender self-ID. In other words, if you're 18, well, there's issues. You could apply between 16 and 18 as well, but different criteria apply. But if you're 18, you could go into Department of Social, well, a certain section of department, and you could correct your gender. That was the language used. In other words, you could go in, if you're born a male, you could say, I want to be from now on considered as a female, and that's what you would be leaving the office. You would be considered. Now, I presume no one does that lightly. But that means, and to go back, if I can get Roderick O'Gorman's statement from Friday back onto the file here somewhere, what the government were saying, because somebody who was born a female and therefore would have a cervix, but wouldn't, under the new state law brought in 2016, they are recognised as a woman because they've self-declared as a woman, that the language would be exclusionary to them. Did that make any sense to you, Brian?
Is he even trying to catch a head around this and to the language that's being used? It's for anyone who hasn't heard about this, for the first time hearing about it, trying to say, what the hell are these fellas talking about here? Like, to get back to 2015, the self-ID legislation, referendum. At the time, I didn't know I was voting for that.
No, you weren't. It wasn't in the referendum, but it became part of the same-sex Bill, the referendum didn't change the law that day, as you know. I sound pedantic, Brian, but I don't mean to be. The referendum didn't change that law that day. It had to be enacted through the legislature. And when they were putting the same-sex referendum result into law, they added, and I read out some of the debate on Friday. There was a debate in the Shannon and about this gender identification that was added in. Now, I don't, well, this is no measurement either. I don't remember it being debated on this programme or any other programme for that matter.
But that
doesn't negate it, because people like Helen McEntee and Jerry Buttermer and various other people all stood up in the Dáil supporting it. All stood up in the Shannon, in the Oireachtas, supporting it, and it passed with the same-sex legislation. But down the road, it has got implications in terms of language. And I think that's what they're trying to address.
But the people weren't really... this wasn't discussed with the people.
It was discussed by the people's representatives. Do you follow me?
It was brought in under the radar. There's even an admission by a trans woman on our blog saying that most Irish people don't know about this, and it's true. We didn't. Like, it's only found out about it after the event, and this is. And it resulted in, as we now know, male sex offenders in the women's prison in Limerick. Like, nobody could have envisaged that happened.
Those three people are identifying as women. They are women as far as the state is concerned.
But you're born male, and they're male sex offenders being housed with probably sex abuse victims.
Well, I don't know if the three cases were. I know one case was attempted murder. It was nothing to do with a sex offence.
The Law Society Gazette have a page published, and they say that one of them at least is definitely a sex offender. It says it in the Law Society Gazette.
You see, this is the reason why the wording is changing from the Roderick O'Gorman statement. The provisions in the scheme also address some legislative anomalies which have been identified to provide for employees who become pregnant and who have obtained a gender recognition certificate. In other words, my understanding is that you have somebody who is a male, identifies as a male in work, but they do become pregnant because they were born a woman, and they should be entitled to maternity leave.
But now identifying as male, but who gets pregnant. So the whole idea of sort of being transgender is you wish to identify the opposite sex. Getting pregnant is now identifying as the opposite sex if you want to be a man.
But you see, it's...
Changing words and eliminating the word woman from our legislation to accommodate the absolutely hypothetical situation of somebody who apparently wants to be a man but gets pregnant.
But that's allowed. That's allowed.
But are women not allowed to call themselves women anymore?
Well, of course they are.
But it's not exclusively. They're becoming a subsection of their own sex. They're called cis women now.
Cis women are women who are born, women who are as they were born, so to speak.
But there should be a single word in the English language to describe an adult human female. And there isn't now.
Well, just to go back to this, you say there was no discussion about this gender recognition bill, this gender ID. I tell you, these are the representatives who participated in it. They were Helen McEntee, who was a TD at the time, she wasn't a minister, Paul Morphy, TD, and both of them began by praising the work of Tenney. I spoke to a member of Tenney, the Transgender Equality Network, and both Helen McEntee and Paul Morphy begin their contributions with that. Maureen O'Sullivan, TD, Sean Kenny, Labour, Billy Timmins, I think he was outside Fine Gael at the time. Just to show that there is Jerry Buttermer, Fine Gael, Sean Coyne, isn't Sean Fine Gael? I've attended meetings with Trans Equality Network of Ireland, with parents. So it's quite clear that they were not reacting. They were not reacting to a public debate, which is fair enough. They were reacting to somebody,
a group,
I'm sure Tenney would see themselves as a civil rights group.
Well, they're government-funded lobby group. I don't see them as a civil rights group. But get back to the legislation, the people who were consulted, the women who were affecting, were they consulted? Was the ordinary woman on the street who this was going to affect? Another example, my daughter down at a gym, when she goes to change, someone who was born a male, if he has a gender recognition certificate, all he needs to do is rock up and say, there's €15, fill out an A4, swear an affidavit, fill out an A4 sheet of paper, and now he can undress on naked in front of my daughter and there's nothing she can do.
Yeah, but has that, like, Brian, I'd love, has that happened? You see, has it happened?
It's happening all the time. There's three male, two of them sex offenders in Limerick Prison.
You phoned to tell of your daughter's experience, yep, that she came out. What was it like when she told you she was gay?
Oh, that was absolutely no problem for me. And to be honest, the way the reaction of some men now towards women and the way they treat them, I'm actually delighted, because I'd rather be dating women than to be dating some of the misogynistic men who...
And did she tell you when she was asked out by a male who identified as a female and he seemed to presume that the two of them were lesbians and she said no, did she make you aware of that immediately?
It was a year later. She was 13 and she wasn't really into dating as such, but it was a year later when she told me.
Okay, stay with us, Brian. Katrina Carty. Katrina, good afternoon.
Hi.
Your contribution. Now, do you want to comment on what Brian said, or do you want to make her? It's up to yourself.
I'm not even sure really where to start. I personally identify as gender fluid, non-binary, and use they, them pronouns. And specifically about the legislation that we're talking about where woman and mother comes into effect, I feel like it's so kind of important that people who don't identify as women are given the same respect that other people who are able to give birth are. Because it's not about erasure of the word woman, and not about erasure of women as kind of a state of being. It's about including other people who wish to be parents, who wish to give birth to a child, but feel either dysphoric or don't identify with the word woman anymore. And I feel like saying something like trans men who choose to give birth is them kind of, oh, they've chosen to become a man. They can't, why should they want to still give birth? It's not about that. It's about what they personally want to do, because the gender spectrum isn't bound by sexual things like being able to give birth or being able to get somebody pregnant. It's not bound by that. And also, just there, I feel like there's been a lot of misgendering in the last kind of way. You have to refer to trans women as women, not men who choose to identify as women. But that's just something else. And I just, this, I've heard a lot of people since last Thursday and today, just it feels like they're making more of a divide. There doesn't need to be a divide between LGBT people who identify, who are trans, and women. There needs to be a connection between them, because they're both going through the similar struggles, and they both need to be recognized in a greater capacity. But there seems to be a divide put down between women and, say, trans women or trans men who want to give birth. And the legislation, I feel like, is a great move towards kind of inclusivity and equality between everybody in this country specifically.
And Katrina, who do you think is causing this divide?
I feel like there's not enough education on the different issues affecting trans people and affecting women to both sides, that there just needs to be more education on what is actually going on and more kind of initiatives to get people to understand each other.
Because
so I don't think it's any one person who's trying to divide it. That's kind of reductive to think about it that way. It's just there isn't enough education going both ways.
But the issue was raised on Liveline on Thursday by a group of women initially
who
were unhappy.
Which is, I think, just it did make me very angry, because I was assigned female at birth, and but I now don't identify as a woman. But I don't feel like it's a disservice to women to take women out of that legislation. It's just making it more inclusive to more people. And I don't understand why people cannot want things to be more inclusive. It's not like we're getting rid of women's rights. It's just we're expanding what it means to be a parent and be somebody who can give birth.
Brian?
Well, assigned female at birth is just nonsensical. If you ask any doctor, there's no child is assigned at birth. Sex is observed. It's not assigned.
The sexual spectrum is also... is spectrum. There is intersex people.
Hold on, sorry.
No, there
sorry.
Is not two
sex
sexes.
Sex is not a spectrum. Sex is not a spectrum.
Yes, it
you
is.
You can ask any biologist. Sex
yes,
is not a spectrum.
I can ask a biologist, and they will tell me that
Is gender a spectrum?
Both of them are a spectrum. Gender is a spectrum. There is sexual spectrum, because there are intersex people, and also people who may look like they were male, but have different chromosomes.
Can I respond to that point?
Yeah, okay, Brian.
When you talk about intersex, we are talking about people with DSDs, differences of sexual difference. They account for 0.01% of
birth. It doesn't matter how much, and even in
all those cases, they are all either male or female. This is a scientific medical fact.
Also, the at birth, when somebody sees that you're intersex, they usually choose for you, which is... kind of an abominable way for the hospitals to react to somebody who is their own sex in their own right. So
this is scientific illiteracy that we're listening to now, Joe. It's not chosen for them. DSDs, and by the way, people with DSDs are being repeatedly asked to be brought into this debate.
Don't use acronyms. Use the full words, Brian, just for people who are new to this debate.
When they say intersex, what they refer to is DSDs, which are differences of sexual development. They affect 0.018% of the population in births, and they aren't randomly assigned a sex at birth, because each of these genetic conditions affect either male or female. They're not randomly allocated out like something out of a sorting hat. And by the way, these people have repeatedly asked not to be brought into the debate about trans, because when we're talking about trans, we are talking about absolutely unambiguous males, not people with DSDs or intersex, saying they wish to be female, they don't get surgery, and they want to have access to women's spaces, toilets, changing rooms, rape shelters, where women, vulnerable women, can't be guaranteed to go to a place where a male won't be, who wants to decide that he is a woman.
I have a lot of trans friends and a lot of non-binary friends, and I don't know if you've met anybody trans, but it takes an enormous amount of confidence to be who you are in this world, especially with people like you who are so intolerant to listening to people's struggles about being trans. I just think that, especially trans women, somebody said last week that they are holding up kind of the mantle for violence against women, and I feel like that's a horrible thing to put onto such a vulnerable group of women. And they don't limit what it means to be a woman, they expand what it means to be a woman. And that is the ultimate form of feminism in this world, is including everybody who goes through a struggle of identifying or being a woman.
Gender non-conforming males do not expand what it means to be a woman, they expand what it means to be male. A man who wears a dress and wears lipstick is not expanding what it is to be a woman. He's expanding what it is to be a male.
Specifically, if they're gender non-conforming, then they're expanding what it means to be non-binary and gender
Everyone is non-binary when it comes to gender. There's no fix. Like, I'm a single father. I raise the child. I change the nappies. I did the dishes. I do the laundry. I do the cooking. I knit. I stayed at home to raise the child. I have more in common with women than a lot of these trans women.
I'm a man. Those are social attributes given to women. Those are not gender.
Shows how meaningless it is to try and say that because of certain gender roles or gender attributes that men can be women. I'm not a woman. I'm a man. It's a biological identification.
You can be a man and somebody can identify as a woman and somebody can be a woman. But that doesn't mean that they invalidate other people.
Only women can be women.
I mean, we've just been discussing what a woman is today. And a woman is a social term. A woman anybody who identifies as a woman.
No, that's circular definition. When you're defining something, you can't use the word. Define woman without using the same word.
I didn't use the same word. I said identify.
You said a woman is anyone who identifies as a woman. You said the woman is a woman is anyone who identifies as a woman.
Yes.
Like, what's a chair?
I don't feel like that's too hard of a concept to grasp.
It's meaningless.
And correct me if I'm telegraphing some of your points incorrectly, Katrina. But Brian, Katrina's saying, what's the harm? Why does it bother other people?
That is the crux of my point.
You see no harm, okay. Okay, Joe, imagine you're a sex abuse victim and you're incarcerated for a small petty crime like shoplifting, and you find out that in the cell next to you is a sex offender. How do you think you sleep that night, having that trauma being brought back to you? Imagine you're a rape survivor and you want to go to a rape crisis clinic, and the person who turns up to do your counselling is a male who identifies as a woman. How will that feel?
At least address them by how they identify. You know we're talking about a rape victim,
and the problem is that we're not calling the person who's doing the counselling is by the right gender. We're forgetting completely about the victims here, the real victims.
It's
you'd be asking who else is being harmed. Do you not think my daughter has a right to undress in her changing room, Jim, without having a biological male expose his penis to her? Yes or no?
No, I can't. I don't think that that's the issue. Do you know how much confidence it
takes a lot of confidence. Katrina reply. Yeah. Go ahead, Katrina.
Most trans women are one of the most vulnerable aspects of the LGBT system. They are in America, they are the most targeted.
No, they're not. They're actually the most safest demographic. There have been zero trans women killed in Ireland. When you talk about trans women who have been killed, you're talking about sex workers in South America who complete, and by the nature of the work, in Ireland, in Western civilization, and even in America, trans women have not been targeted. And if they have,
over the weekend, I read a figure, Brian, that of the 300 transgender women were killed in the States last year. And
I don't actually think that's true, though. I think you're talking about South America with Brazilian sex workers.
The USA, trans women are like targeted more often than any other person who identifies.
That's absolutely not true, because when you look at the violence or deaths, it's nothing to do with transphobia. It's at the hands of partners and other typical. That they have much lower rates of violence than other. There have been zero trans women deaths in Ireland.
They're not vulnerable.
They're not marginalised.
Thank God.
But you get the impression that some people wish they were.
No. And Brian, would you have these discussions either with your friends or your daughter?
Yes. I first got involved when I talked to some women and they raised the concerns, and I thought to myself, since when have middle-class Irish mammies ever been wrong about child safety?
They raised what concerns with you? About your own daughter?
About that issue, but also then about how so many other kids, the 5,000% increase in young girls who are identifying as trans, and it's like a social contagion.
But it's not a contagion. It's just because we are becoming a more liberal society and people are becoming who they always were.
Okay.
And it's not that there was any less trans men before this. It's just that they weren't able to come out before.
Where are the middle-aged women identifying as trans now? 5,000% increase in young kids, no increase in middle-aged women.
Also, there is such strong societal pressure coming from older generations that you would not be able to accept that part of yourself. But the younger generation is a lot more willing to be more introspective and actually come to terms with who they are. And that means that there is going to be an increase, but it doesn't mean that it's a social contagion. It just means that it's being talked about more and that it's being more accepted by wider society.
And Brian, just to finish this section before we take a break, like I remember last 2 years now, we were contacted by Erica, who's transgender, and she explained in great detail it wasn't until her parents died that she felt that she could live her true life because of
exactly.
Erica Coates. But anyway, back after this break, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 184 3709.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And remember, you can send us a WhatsApp voice message on 087-184-3709. 087-184-3709. Lorian, you're listening. Your contribution, please, Lorian.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Brian and Katrina. So I called in because I am the parent of a transgender boy. I guess I was prompted to reach out after listening to the shows last week.
Okay.
Some of the same points that Katrina's already highlighted, the language being used to describe transgender people, was needing clarification. And so that was what caused me to reach out in the first place.
Okay.
And then learning a bit more about, the maternity bill and how things have been changing, I just think that you know, changing language is a challenging experience. Mm-hmm. And that's something, as the parent of a transgender child, as a transgender teen, I've gone through that and I've had to adapt and change my language. And the result is a more respectful and more inclusive environment where everyone feels recognized. And becoming more inclusive with your language is not something that is excluding anyone. No one is mm-hmm. taking away from the identity of a woman by adapting language to be inclusive of people who may have a uterus and may bear children but may not identify as a woman. So that's where I am on this. I think to me, it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate that it's a complicated issue that has a lot of connections with things, and I'm hearing a lot of fear coming forward about implications that this might have. What I wonder, though, is how founded are these fears, or are these mm-hmm. just fears that you know people generate by things that they're unfamiliar with, uncomfortable with, and the unknown?
And for a lot of people, it's an education as well. It's a new... The fact that this gender ID law, which came in 2015, it seems most people are unaware of it, but it was debated in our Oireachtas, and this has led now to the every piece of new legislation must take into account what the legislature decided in 2016 about gender self ID. If you wish, Laurie, and do you want to talk about your own experience and learning experience, if that's the case, when with your own child?
I mean, sure, I'm happy to give an overview of just the basic experience that we've gone through. My child came out as non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 4 or 5 months later, expressed that he would like to use he, him pronouns and
okay.
identifies as a boy. So okay. my child was born a female and then now is referred to as a transgender boy. Mm-hmm. When he is misgendered, when people call him a girl, it's especially people who know him, know that he is a transgender boy, that is an act of aggression. That's an act of disrespect when it's done intentionally. So it's important mm-hmm. to, and this is something that not everybody knows, and that's why I wanted to reach
okay.
out to clarify, because once we do know, it's important to have respect. And the way that we see a person, my own perspective of a person in general, may be different from how they identify, but once I understand this is who they are and this is how they wish to be addressed, then it's very important to respect that. And the fact is, Ireland is a country that recognizes that there mm-hmm. may be people who identify as women and have a uterus, who identify as men and have a uterus.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, limiting the language in this bill to women is exclusive of a recognized part of our population. So I guess I've gone from my journey back to, you know, kind of the overall point, but learning to change the language was a challenge. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our household, with the evolution of the pronouns that our child was using, we would make mistakes. We would call him by the wrong name. We would use the name he was given at birth by accident. And it took a while to adopt the new pronouns and the new name. But, you know, eventually, and now it's natural. Now it mm-hmm. flows, and now, you know, using the wrong pronouns or, you know, using the wrong name is just not something that happens anymore in our house. So when I hear that we're wanting to limit protection for maternity services, and my child may wish to bear mm-hmm. a child someday, just because he identifies as a man doesn't mean that he doesn't wish to reproduce using mm-hmm. the resources that he has for reproduction. And so it's important that we include all these groups of people in our discussion about this and in the protections that we're offering. This is about protections and rights that are being offered and promised. And excluding groups from those protections is just unjust.
And, Laurie, insofar as any of us know, what is next for your teenager?
Next for my teenager is to continue through secondary school and continue pursuing his interest in learning different musical instruments. That's from where mm-hmm. I stand, that's what's next for my teenager. If you're asking about his transgender journey, the answer is, I don't know. I'm going to wait and learn that from him and learn that with him.
And if there was an issue of medication, where you'd still have a say, obviously, given the age of your teenager, have you thought about that?
It's not something that has been discussed yet. So, you know, I wouldn't have a lot to say on that topic at this time.
Okay. And if the word surgery was raised at this stage?
That's not a topic that has been, explored by myself, by his father, or, you know, by him with us at this time. Yeah, he's a young person and he's, you know, relatively early on in his life as a transgender person. It's only been about a year and a half.
Okay. Stay with us, Laurie, and 51551 is our text number. Sarah, your contribution, please.
Hi, Joe, and thanks for having me on. So, yeah, I was one of the women who was not allowed into the National Women's Council AGM last week. It was very upsetting. I had been invited. They had emailed me on the 1st of June and said, dear Sarah, would you like to register? I have been emailing them over the last couple of years, just trying to highlight the issues around what's happening. So, it's not unusual for them to email me. So they emailed me, asked me to register. I registered. I got my ticket. I booked my day off work and I went in. And absolutely no idea there'd be any problem with me turning up. I had my ticket.
What point were you going to make if you had got into the meeting?
So I was going to ask a question, the same question. I was at an event in April and the National Women's Council were there. It was an event ran by Alan Farrell, who's a Fine Gael TD, and it was a gender-based violence event. And I had asked the same question I was going to ask, which was, you know, basically, what is the definition of a woman? Because I find that, you know, Brian hit on it earlier. There's a big problem when words lose their meaning. And there's currently this circular definition of a woman. A woman is anyone who identifies as a woman. And so, you know, if you look at the GRA, because I heard you talking about that, the Gender Recognition Act, there's no definition of the word woman in there either. So when there's no definition, there's no criteria. So someone can get a gender recognition cert if they promise to live in the preferred gender. Mm. But what does that involve? So if you're writing legislation with, you know, words that have no definition, where there's no criteria, you know, the law is basically a serious problem then, because it, at no point can you revoke a cert because, well, what criteria did they not adhere to? So for me, I'm a woman. I have daughters and, you know, I know I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. I've lived my life. I've had three children. I've, you know, suffered all the things that lots of other women have around, you know, sexual discrimination, in some cases, you know, abuse. And it's important that women are allowed to mobilise and to use our own language. And we now haven't got this word. The word female has also been taken because the Gender Recognition Act basically says that, you know, you get a new birth cert and you will have female marker on your birth cert if you identify as a woman. So we basically don't have a word left that we're allowed to use to describe ourselves.
Yeah, but were you listening to Katrina's contribution on what they said? What Katrina said was, like, how is that affecting you?
What harm is
it to you? That's what they said.
Yeah, so there's lots of different issues. Katrina in particular is on talking about her child. So I'd love to ask one question because Katrina...
No, you're mixing up with Laurie and Katrina was a non-binary. She identifies as gender fluid.
Oh, okay.
And she was saying language is important, but she was saying language should be as inclusive as possible.
But why does language, like, does dog have to include cat? You know, why does the word woman have to include people who are not women? Is there a new word? I mean, so say they want the word woman. Is there a new word then? What is the new word that I should be allowed to use to define who I am and how I feel?
Okay, who wanted to come in there? Was it Laurien or Katrina?
That was me. Laurien.
Wait, am I?
Laurien, go ahead, Laurien.
Right, so you were saying, why does the word woman have to include people who are not women? But the piece here where there's the different understanding is transgender women, who are people who were born with male anatomy, who identify as women, consider themselves to be women. So why should the word woman, first of all, why should the word woman not include those people? And also, in this case, in this example, what I'm arguing is, why should the word woman strictly be used when there are people who have uteruses, who can reproduce, who are not women because they do not identify as women? And why is it important to exclude people from these definitions?
I can answer that. Yeah, so words have meaning, right? So you're like, why can't people born male be included as women? You know, the word woman has a meaning. It's an adult human female. The word trans woman, the two words combined, already are available for those people, those men who believe they are women. But why should my reality change just to accommodate somebody else's?
But it doesn't. How does your reality?
It does, because now the word woman doesn't describe a biological woman anymore. It has to include men.
And I'd like to come back to Brian's point where he brought up about his daughter changing in the changing room. Brian's daughter is a lesbian, and my question there is, if we're going to be so concerned about who we are, who we or who our family is changing clothes around, you know, I don't feel this way at all, but one could argue that, you know, having people who are sexually attracted to the same sex, are they allowed, would people be concerned about them changing in the same sitting rooms? That's a very old It's a very old argument. It's an old concern, and it's something that we, as a culture, I believe, have gotten past. We've moved beyond that. Lesbians can change in the female changing room.
Stay with us back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 184 3709. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And I know you've been on the list there for a few days. You've been trying to get on. Your point, please, Colette, your contribution.
Well, I think that gender identity theory has kind of... Sorry, I'm out of breath because I just ran up the stairs.
Okay.
It's kind of replacing a space that has been vacated by the Catholic Church in Ireland. Now, in 2016, the National Census recorded the percentage of people in Ireland identifying as Catholic was the lowest since records began.
Yeah, still nearly 80%, but anyway.
Yes, it's still a huge number. We are still a Catholic majority country. But I think humans, we're meaning-seeking creatures, and we want meaning, we want purpose, we want connection, we want community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gender identity theory offers a lot of those things to people.
What is it? Just explain your understanding of gender identity theory.
Identity theory is the idea that a person can have a gender identity, which is an internal sense of self, which is different to their biological gender.
Okay.
Now, in Ireland, gender is a protected characteristic, not sex. However, it's slightly complicated in that gender in Ireland is understood as male or female. That's in our equality legislation. So if a person subscribes to gender identity theory, they will believe that gender identity rather than gender, biological gender, should take precedence in matters of law and sports, for example, so that if somebody
Well, that's what the legislature has decided.
Yes, it has.
Now, are we unusual in that?
We're not on our own. There are other countries who have that. But in the UK, for example, they do have a Gender Recognition Act, which does permit people to change their recognised gender. But, however, they just underwent a reform. And as part of the reform, they consulted many organisations who are concerned specifically with women and children
mm-hmm.
and the impact of the legislation on them. In Ireland, that has not...
Okay, so what has changed? In the UK?
In the UK, they didn't change it, but they have a different process. It requires a medical doctor to write a letter. The person has had to have lived in that preferred gender for at least 2 years. So there are certain stipulations that the person must adhere to, whereas in Ireland, we don't have that. It's a much easier process in Ireland. Now, the other thing, I think in terms of belief, gender identity theory is not something that we can, gender identity, sorry, is not something that we can, we don't have evidence for it, that it exists. However, it is very real for the people who feel it. So if a person feels they have a gender identity, that is very real for them. And in terms of religion, it's like somebody who believes in God. God is real for a person, whether God exists or not. If somebody believes, God mm-hmm. is real. Mm-hmm. In the same way, I think gender identity is very real for people who subscribe to the theory or who feel they have that. So we must respect those people and what it feels for them. However, I think what's happened in Ireland is we have shut down conversation on this. Some of the responses I've seen to your show over the last few days shows me this more and more.
In what way? Just explain to people.
That I think it's becoming an orthodoxy in Ireland where anybody who raises questions or queries or wants to even have conversations wants to look at the implications of the theory and its adoption in Ireland. And also, can I just say that the adoption of the theory in Ireland is not just the Gender Recognition Act. There are two government strategies. The LGBTI plus National Youth Strategy 2018 to 2020, and also the National LGBTI plus Inclusion Strategy 2019 to 2021. Those two strategies treat sexual orientation and gender identity in the same bracket, and that is a problem. Sexual orientation does not require a change of language, change of pronouns, change of names. It doesn't require medicalization. It doesn't require surgery. It doesn't require other people to change their language. And it doesn't have consequences for women's rights, or women and children and single-sex spaces. So there are two completely different categories that have been lumped together. As a result of these two strategies, gender identity theory is being taught in our entire education system in Ireland, from primary up to third level. It has been adopted across the government, across all government departments.
Mm-hmm.
In the National LGBTI plus Inclusion Strategy, RTE is a member of the committee in charge of implementing that strategy. So is IBEC, and IBEC recently brought out guidelines on how to train women who are uncomfortable with biological males who identify as women going into their toilets. But all of that is another matter. If I get back to the topic of religion, in terms of belief, we are a modern society. A key part of modernity is plurality of beliefs, religious beliefs and other beliefs. We must, and I am so glad you're having this conversation on RTE Lifeline, we must allow people to have this conversation. I respect people who subscribe to gender identity theory. I respect people who have gender identities. It's very important for them. However, we must also listen to people who do not have gender identity, who do not have one, who, for them, biological sex must take precedence. We must have a debate in this country. It has not
But Colette, who is shutting down debate?
The debate is shut down. For example, I know of so many people who are afraid to speak about this. They're actually afraid. They will have one-on-one conversations over a coffee or over the phone, but will not raise their heads above the parapet, will not question or anything, because people, and I'm sure you've seen some of the tweets. it, to even have the conversation can be considered to be transphobic or bigoted or to be hate or to be causing harm. And it is so concerning to me because it is a way, basically, of silencing people who have different opinions. To me, it's like the equivalent of heretics, of blasphemy, of infidels of the past, of, you know, you must, it's almost like in Ireland, it has become the case where you must subscribe to this theory.
Okay, I'll come back. I'm trying to find the...
Can I add one thing, Joe? Yeah. Like, it's not just in our education system.
Okay, I found what I'm talking about. And is this what you are referring to? It's a statement from the Irish Council of Civil Liberties on Thursday after the FORCE programme. I'd let listeners hear it. In the context of increasing transphobic and homophobic attacks, this Liveline conversation is incredibly irresponsible. Yeah. Now, we've been on to the Irish Council for Civil Liberties no less than 7 times to ask them about the statement, what they mean by the statement, who wrote the statement, was there a meeting of, they were bored, was there a meeting? Because the statement, as I found it deeply disturbing of my 25 years presenting in here, to be told that a debate on Liveline was... incredibly irresponsible in the context of increasing transphobic and homophobic attacks is just so insulting to this programme and to the staff on this programme and to its listeners as well. But we've been unable to get a response from the Irish Council of Civil Liberties. Now, they can make statements on whatever they want, but that's the statement you're referring to. And I presume the powers that be in RTE have been contacted by the Irish Council for Civil Liberties, if because that's their job and are never behind the door raising issues. But the powers that be in RTE have not told any of the Liveline staff to stop this discussion.
Well, that's really good to hear. But I think that it's not just the Irish Council of Civil Liberties. I saw People Before Profit made a statement. I saw Labour Youth made a statement. I saw Abortion... I don't know their full title, but it's an organisation concerned with abortion rights in Ireland. They made a statement. Everybody, all of these people calling, even to have the conversation is transphobic. That is the exact way to shut down. So people who have concerns about this theory and how it's being implemented in Ireland are not being heard. People are afraid of being called transphobic. And I know that this is the same in the medical establishment, in psychotherapy, in education, in health, partly because of these strategies, because gender identity theory, it's been taught in prison services, it's been taught in the HSE, the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, National Transport Authority. If you go through every single government government department and national agency, gender identity theory, the theory that your identity is more important than your biology is being taught.
But Colette, I see from your email, you're a lecturer in Southeast Technological University.
That's right.
But are you not? Well, obviously you're not afraid of raising it, so does that not defeat the point you're making?
That's a good point. It's not that I am not afraid. It's that I'm prepared to take the consequences. I've studied history. I know the dangers that happens when people are too afraid to speak up. And I think that's down through time, whether it can be in different religions, different wherever it is. And I'm not prepared to be a bystander. I think it's really important that we have this conversation.
Okay, stay with us, Colette, and Nico will be with us after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 184 3709.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is the text number. Nico, good afternoon. Sorry for keeping you. Your contribution, please, Nico.
Is this in response to the lady just speaking or to the whole thing about language?
Whatever you want. Take your time. Whatever you want.
No worries. Well, first of all, I think comparing gender ideology to the power of the Catholic Church and the damage that it's done to this country is completely irresponsible on so many levels. But I digress. This notion that like inclusivity is pushing women out of spaces is like completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this as a trans man. Okay. I like they're saying that you know your right to being pushed off. But have you ever been denied medical care or put on a waiting list for 10 years just to get basic care as a woman? No.
Okay.
It's the transitional care, like the National Gender Service for Ireland. The wait list is estimated at 5 to 7 years at the moment. And yet, there's plenty of reasons for that. COVID, a bottlenecking of services because of the increase of people looking for it. But to talk like, you know, people who believe in gender ideology or queer people or like trans people are gaining from co-opting language in legislation is ridiculous. Frankly, it just sounds like echoing of a lot of the kind of trans-exclusive radical feminism that's rife in Britain. It's just, I don't know. It's,
okay, well, then, well, Nico, I'll ask Colette. Nico, they were saying there that your analogy with the Catholic Church is very, very insulting.
Okay, but I'm not actually comparing trans identity theory to the Catholic Church. What I'm saying is that I believe there are religious parallels between gender identity theory and religion. One of them is, for example, the requirement for faith that there is a gender identity which cannot be empirically proven. For example, sexual orientation, that can be measured by heartbeat, various physical responses. It's very different to sexual orientation. But I think, for example, we have kind of holy days, we have holy months. Today, this week, this month is Pride Month, and people will say Happy Pride. Other parallels might be the idea of transubstantiation, where you know, the body the bread and wine is believed to actually change into the body and blood of Jesus. And we have the transubstantiation of the physical body, where people believe it can actually change sex. There are mantras as well. There are those parallels. But my main concern and my main point that I want to get across is I respect people who do subscribe to gender identity theory. And I think it's so important that we hear your voice, Nico, as well as everybody else's voice, as I understand how important it is for you. But I think that we must listen to people who have different perspectives on this without demonizing them, without accusing them of blasphemy, for example.
It's not blasphemy, but if you're going to talk like in transphobic language, you know, call trans women, what is it, trans-identified males, and use language where you're going to call
I didn't use any of those terms, actually.
No, you didn't. In fairness, you didn't, but it. The lady before you actually did. She kept referring to trans women as
men.
But
can I ask why, Nico, why would you consider that to be transphobic for a person to say that?
Because, like, first of all, you wouldn't like... Like, if somebody said, like, okay, don't call me that, and you're personally just going to keep egging them and say, you're not that, you're not that, how is that not offensive? Like, as a human to another human, how are you going to continuously like disrespect somebody like that?
So do you think that like if people want certain terms and languages to be used, that everybody should use those terms then?
It's not very difficult, no. I
do understand your point, but I would say the other woman who was on, I can't remember her name, that she might want other terms to be used. For example, she wants the term woman. So my point is that we must listen to her perspective
Sarah,
as well.
That was Sarah.
Yeah, like, and, you know,
most, like, trans women do not encroach on spaces that, like, these radical feminists exist in. That's, like, a big thing. As somebody who's friends with trans women and exists in the trans community, they do not want to encroach on that territory.
But who are radical feminists in this debate?
Radical feminists would be women that would, call trans women trans-identified male and use that language that, like, purposely excludes, like, trans women. I'm a feminist. I have a lot of, like, cis female friends, and they're fine. Fine with trans women who we are friends with. It just seems to be, I've never met somebody in person who has those beliefs. It's always online, and that's, like, it feels like people will say that, like, trans people and stuff only exist online as well, but I've only ever met people with such hateful dialogue that online.
Nico, could I ask, have you considered any of the conversations that have been on Liveline over the last few days? Would you consider them to have been hateful?
I think there's hateful conversations in. I think important for me personally as a trans person, I'm pretty open with dialogue. Like, I'll talk to transphobes. I'll try understand it. Well, I won't understand their point.
And what's a transphobe? Now, the use of the word phobe now, in it, be it a homophobe or a transphobe, is a pretty damning label to put on somebody.
I mean,
doesn't it?
How
would someone come across as a transphobe in a discussion on Liveline to you, Nico? Like, the word phobe now is pretty,
consistently misgendering trans women, using straw man arguments like, oh, if this happened in a changing room, which, like, I don't even understand, like, that example is so overused when most trans people, and as a trans person, would use private changing rooms on their own.
Nico, would you... Oh, sorry.
No, like, a transphobe for me is somebody who uses, like, language that personally, like, that works against a marginalized group of people, whether that's with violence or language, and pushes for that. Those people to be excluded.
Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 184 3709.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Patricia O'Connor, your point, please. Your contribution, please, Patricia.
Hi, Joe. Actually, I got quite annoyed with one section of the conversation earlier on, and it was about, we define children at birth as male or female, etc. And I happen to be a female who has a syndrome called Turner syndrome, which basically means I have one chromosome, an X chromosome, and one section of my other X chromosome is missing. And it means that I can't reproduce a variety of side effects.
Okay.
And there are a lot of people, like one in every 2,000, I think it's every 2,000 women are women with Turner syndrome to a varying degree. There are lots and lots of syndromes that people have that mean they aren't quite male and they aren't quite female.
Mm.
And this idea that everybody is male and everybody is female, it's actually on a continuum. We're from female to male.
Mm-hmm.
And it really annoyed me that, somebody would say, oh, well, we're defined at birth. I didn't find out till I was 46 that I had Turner syndrome because I didn't have the outward signs of it. And I think we have to think about, things that people are going through that we may not know about at all. And in actual fact, not to be, aggressive and bitter and the whole lot about it, because we're all human beings. We're all different types of human beings. We are all human beings. And I know when I was told I had Turner syndrome when I was 46, I had a number of miscarriages. You can become pregnant, but you can't hold on to pregnancies. I read it up, and in the book it said, and this is biology, it said, people with Turner syndrome aren't women. And I remember looking at it and saying, I've lived 46 years. I've been married 22 years. And they're now telling me I'm not a woman. So, you know, the arguments that people put out are so hurtful. And it can be based on biology. And biology isn't always right. We are continually finding out new things about human beings and how the human body works. And it was just to say, you know, for all those people who may feel, are they talking about me or is it me or whatever, you know, we're not all the same. We're very, you know, we are on that continuum from female to male or from male to female. And I think sometimes just let's live with each other, you know, that's what I felt. And I was very, very upset when I heard somebody saying, well, your sex is basically assigned at birth. Well, it may be assigned at birth, but it may not be the right one sometimes. So that's what I had to say.
And Patricia, how did you discover that you had Turner syndrome?
I had 5 miscarriages, Joe, and after the 5th miscarriage, I had IVF twice. And after my 5th miscarriage, they decided to test what's called your karyotype, which basically means your chromosomes. And I was there saying, no, it's my husband, it's my husband, yeah, I know it is. And it wasn't my husband, it was me. And at 46, I got sort of the shock of my life to find out that, say, if I went to run in the Olympics, I wouldn't be classified as female because I only have part of a chromosome.
Okay.
So I know it's not quite exactly on the subject, but, you know, there's lots of things out there that are different, you know?
Thanks, Patricia. Mm-hmm. I just want to fit what Louise has been holding a long time. Louise, your point, please. Louise Whelan.
Hi. Thanks, Joe. I think it's wonderful that we're having this conversation, and I think what Patricia was saying there brings new information to the conversation about how complex all of this is, and that we can have reasonable, sensitive conversations. But just to go back to what I think it was Colette was saying about the difficulty of having this conversation. So I know in 2018 there was a review of the Gender Recognition Act, and I think some of the issues that have been brought up in the last few days on your show were brought up in the public consultation, but they weren't brought into the scope of the review when the report was written, even though the report was supposed to look at operational issues. Because I know you mentioned in 2015 all the politicians were fully behind it.
Yeah.
And I know 3 years later, some other things have sort of come to light of unforeseen circumstances.
Okay.
And that was de-scoped. And then I suppose just looping back to the very first conversation on Thursday about the National Women's Council EGM and women trying to talk about the word woman being removed from legislation that affects women and females, and they weren't allowed to speak. So I think, you know, there is some silencing going on of this debate.
Okay. Sorry I'm over time, but it will continue on Liveline. Thanks indeed to all our contributors. Louise, sounds I'm being real cutting you off, but a minute over already. Real Kennington was in sound. Shane Gavin was the BCI. Shana Gorham produced. Ray Darcy next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe at rte.ie. And now you can send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 184 3709.